Good morning. Welcome to Shattering Mess. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and the deadly myths associated with religion and politics, patriotism and the media, as well as military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is happening behind these headlines, all with an eye to how they will shape our future over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we will return and engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching. So with His guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship. Our phone number for those who would like to be part of this conversation is 877-300-7645. The first item in the news is that Afghan President Hamid Karzai made a speech earlier this week where he called on the Taliban to fight Afghans' real enemies in what was seen both as a swipe against American troops and against Pakistan days after the neighboring country's forces clashed on the border. Most folks don't recognize that the Taliban is part of the Pakistani government. The Pakistani government can no more be fighting the Taliban than the United States can be fighting the U.S. Air Force. And we've known this for a long time, and the earliest affirmation of it for Americans come when Zbigniew Brzezinski recommended to Jimmy Carter that they give the Russians a taste of what they gave us in Vietnam, which all sounds swell until you recognize the consequences of this move, and that we work with the Pakistani government, particularly their military's intelligence arm, which is called the ISI, and provide weapons and funding to the terrorist organization that they had deployed in Afghanistan. They already beat us to this. They deployed the terrorist organization called the Taliban. It was one of about 20 terrorist organizations that the Pakistanis had created. 19 of 20 were positioned in India against, particularly in the Kashmir disputed regions, and the other was pointed at the Afghanis. And the reason was that the Pakistanis recognized that because of the oil and gas reserves that had been found in the Caspian Sea, the best way for the free world to have access to them, and therefore for the Muslim country to gain a revenue tie, would be to control Afghanistan. And so long as the Russians controlled Afghanistan, it would be impossible for the Pakistanis to benefit from a pipeline that would go through western Afghanistan and then through Pakistan to a free water port. So they created the Taliban to harass the Soviet-backed government so that they might take control of the country. The United States, recognizing this, Zbigniew Brzezinski told the CIA, along with Jimmy Carter's blessing, to arm the Taliban and to send the Taliban after the Afghani government. Well, the consequence of that, of course, was that 1.5 million Afghanis died in that civil war. And hypocritical as ever, the United States President, Jimmy Carter, protested the Moscow Olympics and didn't allow America to go to the Moscow Olympics, I believe it was in 1980, because of the Russians having started this horrific war with the Afghanis, when in fact it was America that purposefully, deliberately, knowingly started the war. The upshot of all this is that after 1.5 million Afghanis die and their country is turned to rubble, and the United States stopped funding the Taliban was equipped up to their eyeballs. And the Taliban at that time had an interesting ally, a young Saudi, well-educated, computer savvy, who was all the while working with the CIA, providing a database of mujahideen, of jihadists, who could effectively strike against the Soviet-backed government. And that database became known as the base, Al-Qaeda. And so the United States is responsible for having created and funded and armed not only al-Qaeda but the Taliban. So we have a miserable history here, as does Pakistan, which still controls the Taliban. America has a propensity to manufacture its next enemy. Now, even in Iraq, America befriended Saddam Hussein. And we did so because he was, as a Sunni, a foe of the Shias in Iran, who we now were enemies with because of the fundamentalist government that had taken over that country. So we supplied Saddam Hussein with chemical and biological weapons that he could deploy against the Iranians. And then we invaded Iraq when we claimed he still had those chemical and biological weapons. Well, you're getting the picture. So as it relates to Afghanistan, Afghanistan and Afghanis despise Pakistanis. They aren't allies. They see the Pakistanis as being armed by the Americans, as being enriched by the Americans, which is true, and that both the Americans and the Pakistanis are responsible for their enemy, which is the Taliban. And so Karzai is saying, hey, you know, the real enemy is Pakistan. So if you are a member now of the Afghani Taliban, if you have joined the Taliban as an Afghani as opposed to a Pakistani, start fighting the real enemy, which would be America and Pakistan. Now, that's not exactly where you would want Helmut Karzai to go after 11, almost 12 years of United States war there and all of the killing that has transpired. But nonetheless, that's where we find ourselves in Afghanistan. As a result of his comments, the following day, five U.S. soldiers were killed by a bomb in southern Afghanistan. There is interesting that not a single American media outlet made a connection between Helmut Karzai's speech addressing the need for Afghanis to lash out at their real enemy, and that the following day, five American soldiers were killed. But nonetheless, 19 U.S. personnel have been killed in the last week alone in a series of bombings. Three British soldiers were also killed by a roadside bomb. Now, what's amazing here is that almost all of the Americans are now being killed by those that we are equipping, that we are claiming to be in alliance with. And for what? America has known since about 5 minutes after it invaded Afghanistan that it could not prevail. It's the same things in Vietnam. Within months of the time that we supplied troops in Vietnam, there are recordings of the President of the United States admitting to the Secretary of Defense that it was an unwinnable war, that there was no chance of prevailing, but that he would remain in the fight only because his legacy would be tarnished because the American people would never forgive a president who lost a war, who retreated. So we went from 500 American being dead to over 60,000 Americans losing their lives because of the ego of a man. The same thing is true in Afghanistan. Same thing was true in Iraq. The intelligence reports that the war was unwinnable in both invasions came out very early. And yet ultimately a million people would die as a result of our poor decisions. Turning to a different foe and a different part of the world, there was an article about a week and a half ago on Hungary where a number of Hebrew Israeli periodicals saying, you know, there's a real nasty undertone now that is building momentum in Hungary that is astonishingly anti-Semitic, enraged to the same extent that the Nazis were back in the 1920s. Well, yesterday, this was the result, not of the Israeli editorials, but of the rising tide in Europe of anti-Semitism. Hungary's far right, the Jobbik Party, staged a rally in central Budapest in protest of the capital hosting a World Jewish Congress. Several hundred supporters took part, despite attempts by the government to prevent it going ahead. Jobbik said the rally was to protest against what it said was a Jewish attempt to buy up Hungary. Hey, come on. Why in the world would a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the population want to buy Hungary? And if they wanted to buy a country, why would they want to buy a country with idiots in it like this? It's what religious zealots and neo-Nazism and Nazism in general is a religion. Hitler called Nazism the Volksreligion or the people's religion. It renders people absolutely moronic. Anyway, this is a party which says it aims to protect Hungarian values and interests is the largest in the parliament. So this particular party, not a fringe group, the Jobbik Party, which is delusional, enraged against God's chosen people, therefore engaged, enraged against God, absolutely delirious, is the largest in Hungary. I read excerpts of an article about 3 months ago, whereby a study had been conducted of the attitudes of Europeans. And what it found is that some 75 to 80% of Europeans are now overtly anti-Semitic. Rather than blame Muslims for terror, they blame Israel. When they list the world's most dangerous countries, second only to Iran, is Israel. They blame Jews for all manner of things. It is the same climate that existed immediately before World War II. And this climate is something that God predicted. God actually said that in the last days, the preponderance of his people would come home. And that they would come home because of the way they were being treated abroad. And so, you know, he speaks of the diaspora, whereby Yehudim were hauled out of Israel as slaves in 135 CE after Rabbi Akiva came up with this notion of a false Messiah and decided that he would use his false Messiah to attack Rome. And as a result of all of that, there was the diaspora, where the Romans came in and they renamed the province of Judea Palestina. They salted the earth. They crucified hundreds of thousands of Israeli men, and they hauled the rest off into slavery. Well, God said in the last days that they would return because the hatred would return. Back to Shattering Myths. You can participate in this discussion. 1-877-300-7645. The largest political party in Hungary, in their while engaged in their Budapest rally, claiming that Jews were trying to buy their country. Now, I can't imagine Jews being smart enough to amass the kind of money that you could be, to they could actually buy a country, and being stupid enough that they want to buy a country where the majority political party has an IQ collectively of about 7. Anyway, these people said, the Israeli conquerors, these investors, now, so an investment is a conquering mechanism. That's a you know, it's kind of interesting. Most countries beg for foreigners to invest in their country. It creates jobs and opportunities in their countries. But no, if it's Jewish money, that's bad money. So these Israeli conquerors, these investors, should look for another country in the world for themselves because Hungary is not for sale. Okay, that's just fine. You know, that's take the for sale sign down. And, you know, if you continue to wear that sign on your forehead, you can be certain that no one will invest in Hungary because you're stupid. Moving on to another part of Europe. Europe is falling apart. Europe has reached the point now where it was in the 1920s, where everyone is looking for someone to blame. It's very much like Europe was just prior to the First World War as well, which really wasn't a world war. It was a European war. The Second World War, that was a world war. So the Second World War was the First World War, and the First World War really was just a regional war. That's only interesting because Yauscha spoke of a great world war said that that sign of a world war would herald the generation that sees his return, and that is World War II, because it was the only worldwide war. Anyway, in Italy, which is a country completely underwater, where they are doing the same thing, they're blaming everyone else for their problems, just as we're finding in Hungary. Italy's new prime minister, Enrico Letta, is preaching an end to austerity. Now, Italy is in a pickle because those who did not want to work became beneficiaries of all kinds of lavish government subsidies. And now the reduction of monies, entitlements, gifts that people have not earned is called austerity. It's interesting here that Italy has been spending about 35 to 40% more each year than it takes in as revenue, and it's considered austerity if you spend 20% more than you take in as revenue. Now, I'd like you to run your household that way. For the next 10 years, what I'd like you to do is spend 20% more than you make for the next 10 years. And then if you think that is austere, if that is an austere, limited way of managing your spending, then enjoy your time in prison, because that's where you will be headed. Anyway, he's pledging that austerity must end, and that that debt targets must be done away with, and that they be allowed to fund, which means borrow money to raise entitlements for individuals who are not productive, and also he does want to rid the country of a tax that the average person, which is a housing tax. Turning to another place where the world is blaming others for their foibles and seeing the world in the kind of way that would lead to another world war, because we are going to see what we would refer to as World War III, but really the Second World War on our horizon. It is less than 15 years out, and is in all likelihood closer to in the range of the 14, 15 years on our horizon. This attitude in Europe of desperation, where they will rise up and blame other people for enrage for their problems. We're seeing a hint of it now in Japan, where the new Japanese prime minister, who is a kind of a far right winger, has been visiting shrines to Japanese war dead in World War II. And so South Korea, which, like China, was, and the Philippines, bludgeoned by the savagery of the religiosized troops of Japan, is saying, foul. Don't do that. Take responsibility. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. The last story was a story about the Japanese rekindling patriotism on behalf of their war dead. It is similar to what we do in the United States, where there's great ceremonies and a day dedicated to our war dead. And when countries do that, when they glorify the military aspects of the nation's prowess, that kind of patriotism is actually extraordinarily counterproductive for world peace. It is productive for those who are empowered by that country, because they can use people's patriotism to get by with murder. I mean, they literally do. But It is a very bad idea as it relates to people's ability to think rationally, to process information, to know whether or not that's a good idea. Well, in Japan, now as the country is shriveling on the vine, and Japan is becoming hugely smaller. At 20 to 30 years from now, Japan, as we know it, may not even exist because the Japanese have become so self-centered, so indulgent, that they're unwilling to have children. They want to spend their money and their time on themselves, and so the population of Japan is declining. And with its the population declining, so is the economy in Japan. That's why most recently the Japanese decided to undergo the most massive inflation, the most massive printing of money relative to a country's overall economy and size in world history. And they're also pounding their chest, talking about how great they were worshiping their war dead. This particular cemetery, where 160 members of the Japanese government, including the new Prime Minister of Japan, attended. It is a shrine honoring the World War II soldiers, who were some of the most vicious in world history. It has the 14 leaders of Japan's World War II effort who were convicted as war criminals by the Allied tribunal buried there. It's interesting, by the way, also that General May, in talking to McNamara, who was his attaché at the time, when they devised the plan of ultimately winning the Pacific region of the World War II, by committing acts of terrorism, by firebombing Japanese cities night after night, killing up to 50,000 Japanese women and children each night. They and their memoirs actually talked about the fact that had the United States not won that war, that they most certainly would have been tried and convicted as war criminals for having perpetrated war crime, because what we did is not in any way, shape, or form considered appropriate in any country. We have Larry with us calling in from Florida. How are you this morning, Larry?
Oh, I'm fine, Yada. I was just listening to you there, but isn't that the way the war goes? I mean, you know, the bottom line is that there's atrocities committed. War is not a beautiful thing. And it's one of the, it's a man at a real base instinct. And some of the worst things in the world go on in a war. So to sit around and glorify war is not a good thing, and I think most real warriors would tell anybody that.
Yeah, but you know, America still has this fascination with the Greatest Generation because they went and won the war against dictators in Europe and in Asia. And by doing so, we glorify war. And if you were to take a sane, thoughtful approach to the conditions that existed, how we aided and abetted the development of those conditions, and how we responded in a manner that cannot be considered good to those conditions, and the tactics that we used, when you put it all together, there's nothing to glorify here. There's nothing here that is great. Was there individual sacrifice and some heroism on all sides? Absolutely. But to call it the Greatest Generation, when you look at the death and the carnage and the savagery, it's the same thing as looking at World War I and the political, those who were politically empowered, how they had to have absolutely no regard for life to do what they did. And we didn't either. Whether it be in World War I or World War II, we had no regard for life. And this notion of patriotism, which causes young men to rise up and say, I want to go join the cause, I want to be a hero, I want to go fight for my country, that is an incredibly counterproductive response.
But yet that's all planned. I mean, you're fed all that through movies, you're fed all that through television, the media, every form of media promotes patriotism and waving the flag.
Right. All the pomp and ceremony, the fancy planes that overfly, the sporting events, the parades, the fireworks, all the pageantry is all designed to inspire patriotism. And patriotism is a really, really bad thing. It is, you can't be a patriot, for example, and be part of the covenant. And if you're not part of the covenant, you don't have a relationship with God, and you are not saved. So it's impossible to be a patriot and be saved. So it's important for our listeners to know that while patriotism may make them feel good, you can't be a patriot, someone who is in love with your country, and be saved by God.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people, although I support, you know, the Constitution freedom, the Constitution was written by men that really didn't have a lot of other men's best interests at heart.
Oh,
you know, they're talked about today like they're gods, our founding fathers.
Yeah, but think about that. During the time of the Revolutionary War, two-thirds of Americans were opposed to it. They weren't fighting for the interest of the majority of Americans. Two-thirds of Americans were opposed to the war. And then, look at the use of the U.S. military since that time. Virtually every war that we have fought has been fought for the wrong reasons, using invalid tactics, and almost never. And the number of times you can say that the U.S. military has fought to protect American freedoms is, I mean, you can count on maybe one finger of one hand. The only time throughout all of the wars, and it's just a whole litany of wars, from the Indian Wars to the Revolutionary War to the War of 1812, and then you go on through the Mexican-American War and more Indian Wars and the Spanish-American War and World War, the Civil War and World War One and World War Two, and then our invasions of Vietnam and Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, we've just constantly been at war. And what you realize is there's only one of those wars in one theater that you could even make an argument that our military was actually used to defend American freedoms. And all of the rest, you can't. I mean, there was one
theater would you pick in World War II?
Well, the Germans had absolutely no interest nor any capability of invading America, and so there is no way to say that our invasion of Europe protected American freedoms. And so
Harbor's taught as a stand down at the war colleges, so that was a stand down false flag there. It was
correct.
Planned out.
That's true.
The
Japanese didn't want to invade the islands. They were not trying to take over the islands. They weren't trying to occupy America. They had no means of occupying America. Well, we did need to respond to the Japanese, sacrificing 300,000 American lives to avenge the death of 3,000 is probably not the most moral or appropriate way to respond. But that's the only place where you can even make the argument.
The admiral didn't even want to be in that day. It was FDR that made him stand down. FDR was a war criminal. But
yes.
I talked to a radio operator at Midway that day. I actually had an opportunity to speak to the man, and he told me they knew they were going to be hit, and they thought they were being hit in Midway as well. So
yes,
that's what he told me. He was there. So
it's like 9/11. The United States government, through the FBI, knew absolutely that the World Trade Center, in particular in the Pentagon, were going to be attacked. They knew how they were going to be attacked, that Muslims were going to fly planes into the building. They knew that prior to the attack, that Muslims would have to go to flight centers to learn only how to handle the controls of major airliners, which nobody does as a student pilot.
They knew that.
Right, and they knew that the inspiration for this was a man that they now had in prison, which was Ramzi Youssef, who was the fellow that plotted and pulled off the first bombing of the World Trade Center. The FBI knew every detail of 9/11 before it occurred and still allowed it to occur because they wanted to respond with a war. Because once you begin to fight a war, those who are empowered have ever more power and control, and the people are willing to give up more of their wealth and more of their freedoms. And so
their wealth is what they're
right.
and freedoms. You're right. They're interested in both sides
correct.
Of that. And if you own Halliburton or whoever, you know, you make a ton of money, and the American taxpayer pays for it all.
Correct. And if you look at World War II, particularly in the Asian theater, we had full warning of what was going to happen. at Pearl Harbor, and it was like we said, okay, let's line up the planes, let's line up the ships, let's make us as vulnerable as possible, and let's go off and play golf, and let's sleep in, and let's do nothing while this occurs, because then it will give us this this opportunity to be a wartime president, and you know, I can have I can spend the rest of my life as King FDR. If this all occurs. And so, at the very least, they stood down while it occurred. But the fact of the matter is, the bombing at Pearl Harbor was not an invasion. They turned around and went the other way. The only part of U.S. territory, and it was even questionable of whether it was part of the United States even at the time. We were just at the beginning of we had acquired it, but with Alaska, they had a couple of thousand troops in Alaska, and the only reason they were in Alaska is because the logical way that America could have ended that war quickly, as opposed to losing 300,000 men, was to fly bombers up through Alaska, down through Vladivostok, fuel at Vladivostok, and then bomb Japan. And so they wanted just to prevent us from doing that. They had no interest, no capability of invading and occupying the United States.
I will
and
say
so
one thing about
we didn't fight for our freedom.
The Japanese were particularly cruel. I mean, they would give people diseases, burn them alive, and everything else.
Correct.
Or POWs.
That's correct.
They treated women no better than men.
And
they were savages, both in China and towards American troops. You know,
the first time I ever recall actually hating as a young man was when I visited the Cloverleaf Cemetery in the Philippines, based upon the savagery that the Japanese had perpetrated there. And I'll speak to that when we return to Jeff. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yana. We're here with Larry Skaldin for Florida, having a conversation that is more challenging for Larry even than it is for me, and that you have a son that is involved in the military. I have a nephew who is involved in the U.S. military as well. And, you know, Larry, I spent about a month several years ago because I had this feeling that as much as we hear politicians and the media and everyone else saying that we should thank our troops because they provide our freedoms and they're providing a great service to us by protecting our freedoms, that maybe that's never happened before, that maybe the American military has never engaged in a battle to protect American freedoms.
I
studied it. I couldn't find one.
They're used as muscle for those who want to take from others what doesn't belong to them. In fact, our military is really being used like a bastard stepchild. I'll stop there. That's what I say.
I would agree with you up to this point. And the point that I would where I would differ is fairly small, but at the highest echelons of the U.S. military, when you get to admiral and general rank, then they are co-conspirators. They are part of the problem. If you listen to someone like Petraeus or General Allen, what you find in their words and in their ambitions is no different than what you find in the words of politicians. So at the highest ranks, our military is a co-conspirator in the myth. Now, the only battle that I could find,
sure,
if the United States...
talking about the men.
Yeah, the average guy that signs up, and most men sign up for, and women, and it's about, 10 to 15% women now in the military, most sign up because it is a opportunity for a job or an opportunity away from a bad scene at home. Some signed up still for patriotism. But the only battle I could find that Americans actually fought to protect American freedoms is pretty ignoble. It is in the War of 1812, when the British were coming against Washington We fought for an hour, maybe two, and then we retreated and ran and gave the British a clear path to Washington. But the battles in that war that were won were won by private militias and private individuals who marshaled those private groups.
It seems to me, and I just want to point this out since we're talking about that. I think what England couldn't take in a battle from the Americans or in a war from the Americans, they took with the Federal Reserve System and the CFR, because the CFR was set up exactly 10 years after the central banking system, which happens to be the fifth plank in the Communist Manifesto, the Federal Reserve System. And then it was MI5 that helped set the CFR up. So that money goes over to you, Scott.
I think another angle to this is that a lot of people, they perceive themselves as being an extension of the government. So therefore, they think the government has the best for them, best intentions for them. And then the military is an extension that makes sure that our government has the freedoms that they have.
Correct.
Because it's always the threat that the government can bring in the military.
Correct.
And so people, since they think that the government is always looking out for their best interests, they then feel that because the military is an extension of that, that protects the government's freedoms, which is protecting their freedoms, then they, you know, that's something that they should honor.
The military of the United States ensures that those who are empowered, whether they be Federal Reservists or they be politicians, what it does is it ensures that they stay in power. That's what it does. And the reason that the Second Amendment was crafted by Madison and by Jefferson was the realization that governments do build militaries, and they use their militaries not to to protect the freedom of the country, but to protect those who lead the country against anyone opposing them. And so the reason that we have the right to bear arms was because of the need to have private militias. Because with private militias, the government can't use its military to impose its will. And secondarily...
So you're saying that the Second Amendment wasn't set up to hunt down tyrannical deer.
No, the Second Amendment, it's pretty clear what it says. It says that a militia is absolutely necessary to to freedom and to a free people, because without it, government will use its military to impose its will on the people. And so the reason that we have the right to own and bear arms is because of the need to have civilian militias.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research. In July, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that...